F4.
Number 24B.
So, in 16 he says, that's important for our life, you know, it's so timely, everything. It's not 2,000 year old and old stuff. It's always right now, true. Ye have not chosen me. Says, ye have not chosen me. Remember in the first part, at the point of principle, he was standing there and the disciples came to him. They saw him coming, they heard his teaching, and they came to him, and they abode with him one day in the irradiance of life, truth, and love. They all came to him, so that he says to them, ye have not chosen me. It looks as if you were saying, all right, I choose Jesus, I go and stay with Jesus. But actually this was not the case. I have chosen you. My consciousness has attracted you. That's what he wants to say. But I have chosen you and ordained you. So this is so important to see that there is no missionary work to be done. But what has to be done is that we entertain that consciousness which is universal. I always like to think when I work spiritually, scientifically, that what I entertain in my consciousness goes over continents and oceans and reaches the most remote part. That's why suddenly sitting in little Zurich, in little Switzerland, in a little apartment, sitting there and looking out into the immensity of being and see that consciousness is universal, it's cosmic, it's not me sitting somewhere in a room that is in a great mansion, in his father's house, or many mansions, and sitting in that one universe, and that consciousness which I entertain is not limited to those four walls in which I sit. That consciousness has no limits whatsoever, and so I am aware of it, that it goes over oceans and continents, can reach anybody, so that suddenly somebody from New Zealand or from Australia or from America or from Nigeria or I don't know where, just somehow is drawn by that consciousness to the idea, through all kinds of channels and ways and means. Even if it is through a second bookshop or even if it is through a discussion that is overheard, doesn't matter. Christ consciousness is universal, and therefore we choose them. That consciousness attracts that which is necessary and does not attract, hopefully, that which is just a bother to us, just a burden to us, just a nuisance to us. That shouldn't be attracted. So we have to be aware that that consciousness is reflecting itself there where somebody mentality is ready to be attracted. So we haven't either chosen the Christ. I, looking back to my life, I couldn't see a single incident or a single element which would say that I have chosen Christian Science. I was an ordinary boy, you know. I liked nothing more than just to play on the street and in the woods and so on. I never read the Bible. I never read any literature. And I was never attracted to a church or to any religion or anything. But I guess that consciousness of my mother, that never really taught me very much, but held a consciousness that there is but one consciousness, I think, had chosen me. That I was attracted to it suddenly. It just put me into a very dirty situation where I couldn't get out of it anymore. Then you turn. You see? That's the best thing that happens. Where you say, gosh, I don't see any way out anymore. There is no purpose in life anymore. There is nothing in this life that is worthwhile. And you struggle and struggle. And then suddenly you are touched by it. I didn't choose Christian Science. Christian Science did choose me. I'm so sure about that. You know, you hear sometimes of people who say, well, already as a little boy, you know, he was so gentle and he was always praying to God and he was saying, I never prayed at night. so that they were prepared slowly for a great mission in the religious way. Nothing about that with me. Just think of me as ordinary as can be. But there is a consciousness in being that is entertained and entertained here, perhaps through my mother, that entertained the consciousness. Gosh, she never taught me. Never taught me. I always thanked her that she never taught me Christian Science, except when I asked her. Then she gave me a little story, and that was enough. That was about 2 or 3 minutes. That was enough. She never taught Christian Science down on me until I could swallow it. No. It's the atmosphere. And I think that is what we have to see here too for the whole world, that we entertain an atmosphere within our consciousness which is big, which is universal, and that atmosphere attracts what needs to be attracted and brings forth what needs to be brought forth. So, ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and even ordained you. I have a great feeling then, after some decades, that there is some mission that I have to fulfill, that I have a special mission to fulfill. And I got that sense when I began to see that divine science is my origin, that divine science ushered me into human being. From that moment on, I felt something very big in me moving. I felt really like a woman that is who is expecting a baby, as if inwardly something were moving to, and struggling towards being born. So big, so strong it was, that sense, you are a mother to divine science. You give birth to divine science. And from that point, it naturally never left me again. So I have not chosen it. Being has chosen me. The Christ has chosen me. So it is with everyone. No one is excluded. All are chosen, and so everybody has the possibility to accept it. Some don't accept it. They reject it. That's their business. That's their peer. Yeah. So just think of the David story, the little shepherd boy story. He was chosen. He was the least of the least. But he was chosen to be king. Everybody can be chosen to be king. So I was thinking of Isaiah that said, I have called thee by my name. That's wonderful. I have called thee by thy name. You are mine. I have nothing to do. I have no will of my own. You are called. You are mine. That's the name that he has given to Israel. So he ends up by saying, these things I command you, that ye love one another. Then he gives another little aspect of this abiding in the world, in the Word, under Christ, in Christianity, by showing that we have to abide with it in spite of the very opposite. The world hates the Word and the Christ, though it is without a cause. And in that atmosphere of the world hating the Christ, it seems that the world hates us as a person, but that's not true. It hates the very fact that there is a God who can be defined. They hate the very fact that there is a Christ which they cannot touch, and so they hate everyone who has some inkling of that Father and that Christ. So he consoles them and says, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. He consoles them and says, I went the same way, so don't blame yourself if you are up against difficulty. Just remain in love, you see. In spite of everything, remain in love. It goes on in 19, if ye were of the world would love his own. And we know that. The world always loves his own. But because ye are not of the world, but I have chosen you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Again, showing that we are not of this world, but that the Christ has chosen you out of this world, therefore the world hates you. So we must always see that we are not accepted, that if our ideas, our consciousness, our worldview of Christian Science is not accepted, is perhaps ridiculed or so, that is not aimed at our person. It's aimed, it's the ignorance that is aimed towards God and His Christ. Because, 21, they know not Him that sent me. They don't know the Father that sent me, the Christ. He that hateth me, therefore, hateth my Father also. So we can really say every time that we feel that we are attacked, that we are persecuted, that we are rejected, that they reject really not us, but they reject the Father and the Son. They reject the Word of God, the definition of God, and they reject the ideas of God as being the only reality. That is what we have to see. So we free ourselves from feeling personally hurt. But the word might be fulfilled that is written in their law, they hated me without a cause. That's from Psalms, twice in Psalms, they had that rendering, they hated me, but there was no cause behind it. So they didn't hate us because we have done something wrong, but they hate us because we have done something right. And that's absolutely true. So, we see that in spite of the world not accepting us, our job is to abide with our ideal. To abide with it, through hell and high water, we have to abide in it. And have to go through it. We have to go through the fire and not try to go around the fire. And if we go through the fire, we come out on the other hand, on the other end, like the three boys, with no smell in it, no smell on us. We come out wonderfully. We must be tried. Even the gold of human character must be tried, so that finally even our feeling, nice feeling of love is tried and tried and purified until it sees there is something higher than human love, namely love as itself. Love God as a factor in being. That is what is necessary. Yes. Then we go on and see that abiding and being a sticker from the point of view of science. We have epitomized this like this. In spite of the world's ignorance and hatred, we can still abide in the consciousness of the Comforter. So that is always that which comforts us when we see that we are misunderstood. And we see that we are excommunicated, we see that we are an outcast, humanly outcast, that we can see that we are taken in and are very welcomed to the Comforter. That we have something that is much bigger than the hatred of the world, that we have the love of the Comforter. So, John tells it like this. He says, "But when the Comforter is come, whom I will send unto you from my Father, even the Spirit of truth, even the Spirit of truth, which proceedeth from the Father, he shall testify of me." So we will have another one that testifies for us. Not the world will testify for us, but the Comforter, the Father, will testify for us. "And ye also shall bear witness." Ye also shall bear witness. Why? How? "Because ye have been with me from the beginning." What does that mean? Does it mean that they were with him from the beginning because they were the first disciples? Therefore they were the first one, and right from the beginning they were with him? No, no, it means something much more scientific. Namely, they were with him going the whole way. They could see right from the beginning the way of understanding that he went. And that is the testimony that we give. the testimony is not that he said, well, I was one of the first disciples of Jesus. You know, I'm really a big guy. I'm the very first that was following him. Well, we know those. Huh? We know from Mrs. Eddy's life that she said that only she had four people who would be loyal to her from the beginning on. Only four of those many thousand. Well, we know that from John Dolly. Not everyone went the way. You know, there was all... Don't think of that time as if everything would have been wonderful. The development of the idea was wonderful. It was exciting. It was really exciting. 1 year after the other. But there was a lot of falling away. And you could see the falling away in various ways. The moment somebody makes John Dolly personal, and there's a personal sin, he would fall away. He would turn against him. Not only fall away, but turn against him. The moment he would bring in a new idea, higher idea, there was resistance in many of them. And so they would fall away. They didn't go the way, you see. But here he says to the disciples, you have been with me all the way, from the beginning. You have seen the way, and you did abide in that way, and you went with me, you went with that idea. So this is history that repeats itself, so to say, because it's spiritual history, and we have to be very careful that, to see that we bear witness to that way that he has shown us. And then he goes on, you have been with me from the beginning, to chapter 16, 2. They shall put you out of the synagogue. See, that's the opposite of remaining with God, is not remaining with the synagogue. That doesn't go together. You can't be obedient to a human organization and to a human law and at the same time be obedient and loyal to principle. That doesn't go along. You either have to choose. Are you going to be obedient to a church and a church organization and a church hierarchy that is composed of people, and people are always people, just as we know we are people and are not really saints? So we have always to choose what we are going to do. And therefore, such an excommunication, as he was saying, they shall put you out of the synagogue, that was excommunication, is really when you are abiding with the way of life, with the way of understanding, the very best thing that can happen. This is not something negative, this is something very positive. Think of the freedom that John Dolly got when he was excommunicated. Think of it. He couldn't have done the job within the church because that was narrow, that was limited. He was not allowed to talk to more than 30 people each year in the club. He was not allowed to write books. That's all unauthorized literature. He was not allowed to give lectures by himself. He was not allowed, not allowed, not allowed, not allowed, not allowed, not allowed. Huh? These are the laws of limitations that of which Mrs. Eddy talks in the manual, and within those limitations you cannot really be a true follower of principle. So in order to be really able to follow the dictates of principle, you have to be free of any limitation. And he was just free as a bird, you see. He just could really spread out his wings and really do what he wanted to do and in the way he wanted to do. He was a free man then. And so it was with all of us who were excommunicated. This is the best thing we could that could have happened. What was good about it, if I had stayed in that church, naturally everybody had the choice to stay in the church and just recount John's teaching, John Dolly's teaching, well, what is it? To be in that church and to see how it goes down and down and down and down. And then when you are old, like I am, you just sit in a big church with empty chairs. What's that any purpose in it? There's no purpose in it. Just always to read the lesson sermons. In 100 years, you read the lesson sermons. Always the same lesson sermon. What is man? It always brings in what is man that has breath in his nostrils. That comes over and over. You know it from the beginning, what is in the lesson sermon. It's just being interested in isolated truths which are not scientific truths. Only when one begins to see the whole science of being, therefore the whole structure of being, the system of being, only then you really begin to live, to feel the freedom of investigation, the freedom of discovery, the freedom of revelation, the freedom to express the divine principle the way that Christ tells us to do, not somebody is going to tell us what to do. Think of how excommunication is a way of freedom. And I can never understand people who fear excommunication. They should be glad to be kicked out. Mrs. Eddy never wanted that church. She never wanted that organization. She said, I'm going to make it as a rod, just as Moses had a rod to train people. But she didn't want that church. You know that from the letter she wrote in 1892 to the secretary of the church, and she said, I don't want that church. Finally, she gave in because she said, well, they want it, so they must learn by suffering if they don't want to learn by science. I don't like suffering, you know. I don't know. Apparently, other people like suffering, but I don't like suffering. I hate it. So I don't like to learn Christian science through suffering if I can avoid it. So I like to learn it through science. And I can learn it through science. I am a free agent. We also have rights of freedom in Switzerland. That is also in the Constitution. In the Constitution, I have that right to do what I want to do, as long as I don't murder anybody. I have the right of speaking. I have the right of reading what I want to read. I have the right to say what I want to say. I have the right to talk what I want to do. I have the right to teach what I want to teach. I have the right to go places where I want to go. I have all the human rights invested in the Constitution. Why should I throw it away? We have been fighting it for 700 years. Now we are a democracy that is 700 years old, and we were fighting it against the Habsburgs, against the Italian, against the Pope, against the Napoleon, against the Germans, and against the Prussians. We were fighting for our freedom, for our rights of man, 700 years. Why should I give it up? No. No. So, that's what it says. And ye shall bear witness because I have been with me from the beginning. So we have seen the way of life. We have seen how understanding developed right from the prologue on, right from the Logos onward. We have witnessed that way, and we testify for that way. They shall put you out of the synagogues. Oh, I've said that, yes. And these things shall they do unto you, because they have not known the Father nor me. It's all ignorance. All is ignorance. It's not ill meaning. It's not the evil meaning. It's just ignorance. Blunt ignorance and blunt fear. Because we have to see that we stick to our human rights. Yes. What have we seen in this fourfold attitude of the Christ, Christianity as the Christ, as that sense of abiding with the Father and abiding with the Christ. The very first point was that symbol of the husbandman and the vineyard, the vine and the branches. Said, if you are not sticking really tightly to your Christ, you cannot bear fruits, and you will be cast away. If you stick to your Christ, then, and abide in your love, then you better lay down that to which you should not abide, namely your mortal sense of life. Lay it down, give it up, give up really that you consider your friends as immortal. Lay down that mortal sense. Be a friend to them. And so lay down your life for your friends. And so do that even if the world hates you. Still stick to that word and to that Christ, to your conviction. Stick to the signs of Christian Science. Stick to the higher revelation. Don't give it up. Don't give it up. The world may not like it. The church may not like it. That doesn't matter. As long as you are a free agent working within the one divine principle, you are safe. And that is what is asked of us. And finally, at the end, from the point of view of science, he says, and bear witness to it. Bearing witness to it, meaning abide with it, stand up for it, be a proof for it. And so don't give it up. Don't be a traitor. Don't give it up. Stand for it. No matter if you have to go to the scaffold or not, that doesn't matter. That's how every new idea in history has been brought forward. That there were always people who were willing to go to the scaffold. The first Christians were willing to be stoned, to be thrown before the lions. They were willing to be crucified for their faith. And that story goes right through the 2,000 years. It went right through, not only through the religious line of thinking, it went right through the scientific disciplines. Think of Galileo gave in. Think of others at that time, like Bonono, who was willing to be burned in the fire. Think of Hus, the forerunner of Reformation. He was burnt in Constance, and so on. You can see that every forerunner, every pioneer, somehow encounters the point where he has to choose, either to betray the idea or go to the scaffold. Yeah, but today the scaffold is no more so heavy as it used to be. There are civilized countries also that don't burn you and crucify you. Okay, we make a break here.